We all awake this morning? I didn't sleep very well last night, so I'll try to be awake as well. It's interesting, last time I was up teaching with you, Diane, do we have the PowerPoint? Perfect. Last time I spoke, I was a bit of a mess, and I was experiencing some disappointment, some hurt, and ultimately asking, what in the world is God doing with our family? And that was at the core of some of my struggles the last time I spoke, and was kind of the tears were right at the forefront for me. And it seems fitting today that we are going to discuss, what do we do in those times? How do we engage God in those times when the tears are so prevalent? They're right there, they're sitting there, and we're left with these questions. And one of the things I want to mention is I have often been asked on this journey of losing Judson and watching him suffer and die. One of the questions I am constantly asked is, how is it you have maintained faith? And that usually comes from people who maybe haven't struggled or who don't know God and are wondering, how is it you have maintained faith in this? And I usually have two answers. The first one is that it is only by God's grace that I have maintained faith, that he has preserved my faith through the pain. It is only by his grace. So that's my first answer. And the second answer that I always give is, I have had to be completely honest with God about what is going on in my soul. I have had to lay it all out there, let him know every question I have, every disappointment, every hurt, and I have thrown it at him at times in ways where some people might say, that's not appropriate, you don't do that with God. And I'll tell you, that might be true, but it has been absolutely necessary for me to let him know everything that is going on in my soul. To be so honest and to cry out to him ultimately the questions I have and the confusion I have. And this has been an ongoing thing for me. It's now been 4 years since my son passed away, and I will still say that I live very much in this world of what I will call lament. And so I want to ask ourselves today, you know, the chapter that we read was about honesty with God and suffering. And I am going to use the word lament. And the reason is, I think that Psalms are rich with lament. In fact, when Sherry first spoke, she said that most of the Psalms, many of the Psalms, are about lament. And lament is, what is it? What is lament? Lament is complete honesty before God in our challenges. And this doesn't always come easily. If we have a hard time being honest in other relationships that we have, it might be true that we might have a hard time being honest with God too. Honesty is knowing the very core of what's going on in us and being willing to share it with him. And that is lament. And so I looked up, what are some other words for lament? And maybe some of you can relate to these words, but bewail, bleed, complain, cry, deplore, grieve, howl, hurt, moan, mourn, wail, weep. And I would venture to say these are actually the appropriate response to pain. That this is actually what we as humans are created to do when we see and experience pain and suffering. Now, one of the words that was hard for me, and I'm wondering if it's how it sat with some of you, but the word complaint. It's, do we really have the freedom to complain to God? And as I was reading through commentaries and studying lament, everything I read said, yes, God gave David the freedom to complain. He gave Jeremiah the freedom to complain. He gave Job the freedom to complain. Now, that's not that he didn't come back and say, you haven't got it right. He definitely did. But he gave them the freedom to be honest and to complain. And why do we need to complain? Because ultimately, when we look at Scripture and we seek to understand the truth, we see the brokenness in the world, and it creates confusion for us. It creates confusion because we say, God, we know you're this way, but it doesn't feel this way right now. And so we don't understand his ways. And we'll say it all the time, we don't understand his ways. We know that they're good, but we don't understand him. And if I'm really frank, I personally might say, and oftentimes I don't like his ways. I don't like the path he's chosen for me. I don't like the way that he has. But he says, talk to me about that. Let me know that. Lament that to me and allow that to be a place for us to engage relationship together. And so why do we need to lament? Oh, there I had. Ultimately, an expression of confusion to God. We're confused. We don't understand. We're perplexed. I guess I didn't put why we need to lament. I'm going to go back then. So why do we need to lament? I said it already. This world is not as it should be. When sin entered this world, it became not what it should be, not what God intended it to be. It is broken. It is fallen. And we also know Satan is prowling around like a lion seeking to destroy. There is hurt, there's pain, and there's destruction, and it's all around us. And that's because this world is not as it should be. This world is not heaven. None of those things will exist in heaven. But what lamenting does is say, it says, God, I don't like that it's broken. I long for the time when it will no longer be broken. I lament that there is so much pain here. I lament that there is so much destruction. And in fact, it is the appropriate response to what we see in this world. So what I love about Psalm 13 is it's this beautiful model of lament. And the reason it is, and it's six short verses. Oh, we already did that. I'm sorry, guys. Sometimes I think that my PowerPoints mess everybody up more than they do help. So, you know, I apologize if that's the case. Psalm 13 is this beautiful model for lament. It's a short psalm. It's only six verses. But the beauty is it is such a well-rounded expression of lament in six short verses. We see David express the depths of his despair, but we also see his undying trust in the midst of that despair. David demonstrates how prayers of lament can actually be prayers of faith. And so when we lament, when we're honest before God, that can actually be a discipline of faith or an act of faith. So let's read the beginning of Psalm 13. How long, Lord, will you forget me forever? How long will you hide your face from me? How long must I wrestle with my thoughts and day after day have sorrow in my heart? How long will my enemy triumph over me? So in these two verses, David is saying, ultimately, I am so confused. I trust when you say you'll never leave me, that you're never going to leave me, but it feels like you're gone. It feels like you're not present. Where are you, God? I don't see you. He's feeling like God is silent and withdrawn, and he doesn't sense his presence. But what he does is he doesn't pretend that that doesn't exist. He expresses it to God. He says, I don't know where you are. I don't see you, and all I know is I am feeling constant sorrow in my heart. He's saying, why must I continue to suffer? Is this really necessary? What purpose do you actually have in this, God? Why would you want Satan to triumph over me? He's saying, it feels like when I'm sitting in this that Satan is triumphing. Why would you possibly want that? That's not the God that I know and love and understand. So he's crying out his honest feelings toward God and saying, where are you? How long will this go on? And he's saying, and it hurts so much. It hurts so much. David, I believe, expressed some of the fundamental, and Terry said this, some of the fundamental questions in all of our struggles is, with great anguish of heart and heavy confusion, he's saying, I trust you're there, God, but I don't see you, and I don't understand when I'm experiencing this suffering how you're in this. I don't understand how you could be part of this pain. So he's pouring out his broken heart before God. Psalm 6:6 says, And this is David again. I am worn out from my groaning. All night long I flood my bed with weeping and I drench my couch with tears. His sorrow was just ongoing and he felt like he was living in sorrow. And he's saying, gosh, God, why must this continue? Why must this be so long? And, you know, it oftentimes, I think, for us as believers can feel like God is hiding his face and leaving his children in the dark. And David beautifully expresses that, too. In Psalm 143:7, he says, hear me speedily, O Lord. My spirit is failing. Don't hide your face from me. Please come. I want to see you. And what I'm experiencing right now, I don't feel like I see you. Psalm 88:14, Lord, why do you cast off my soul? Why do you hide your face from me? Again, he's feeling like, where are you, God? And sometimes our troubles are so pervasive and so ongoing that it feels like they'll never end. And I think that's what David's expressing here. This has been going on so long, God. Is there ever going to be an end to this? Will this ever stop? Spurgeon said, if the reader of Psalm 13, that's you and I, has never found occasion to use the language of David's questions here, he will soon do so if he longs to be a man after the Lord's own heart. That these expressions of questions are actually the longings of a heart that long to know God, that long to be with him. And the beauty is God is giving us the liberty to pour out these struggles before him, to ask these questions, to be confused. And this is real relationship with God. Lamenting is real relationship. And then he wants us, when we have these questions, he wants us to invite him into our questions, into our confusion, into our struggle. And that's where we get an appeal. He appeals to God. He says, these are all my questions. This is all my struggle. Now I appeal to you, God. Look on me and answer, Lord my God. Give light to my eyes or I will sleep in death. And my enemy will say, I have overcome him. And my foes will rejoice when I fall. So what happens is, instead of David saying, I have all these questions and I'm done with you, God. He says, I have all these questions and I invite you into them. I appeal to you in them. I ask you to come to them. He's saying, let me see you, God. Let me see you. Revive and comfort me. I am lost without you. He recognizes his need for God. And he says, please don't let me falter in my questions and in my confusion. Please don't let me sin. Don't let Satan triumph in my sorrow. When I feel pain, don't let him be there. So David is earnestly praying for comfort, and he recognizes where the need ultimately lies. The need lies with God. He's got to meet God in these questions. He wants ultimately to see God have victory in his struggles. I ask you guys, when we're struggling, is that what we ultimately want? Do we want God to have victory, or do we just want to be released from our pain? I know for me, I most often just want to be released from my pain. I'm not looking for God's victory. But David here is saying, I have all these questions and I have all this confusion, but I want God to have victory in this. And so in his appealing to God, because he believes God is faithful and loving, we see this next movement. And it's profoundly different than the first two verses. He says, but I trust you. I trust in your unfailing love. My heart rejoices in your salvation. I will sing the Lord's praise, for he has been good to me. Okay, it kind of, if you're like me, you kind of go, does he have a split personality? Because this was just four verses earlier, he was in the most depths of despair. And now he's saying, but I trust you and I rejoice. I rejoice because of all you are. He rises above his distress and sorrow and he throws himself. And that's literally what he's doing. He throws himself without reserve into the mercy and care of his divine Redeemer. He assures himself of the answer of peace. How? Because in all these questions he says, but I trust you because of your unfailing love. That is where I will find peace. That is where I will find it. And interestingly, this word, unfailing love, if you've heard David preach, Dave preach in the last year, he's talked about this chesed. This is the unfailing love that is that David is saying, I see in you. It's steadfast. It's immovable. It's unwavering. This is the depth of love. It's chesed. He's saying, I trust you because I know you love me. I trust you because I know you care about me, even though I actually don't really feel it right now. I feel like you're not even present with me. But he says, I trust you because I know your chesed. How do I know it? Because I've experienced it. He has to go back and remind himself of the truth. He has to remind himself of the way God has been faithful in his life. And I think this is such an important word for us, is when we are struggling and we're in pain, we have to go back to those moments when we so clearly remember God's presence with us, his unfailing love. And this is what he's saying when he says, for he has been good to me. It's not that he's feeling God's goodness right now. He kind of told us he's not. But he knows that he has been good to him, and he knows that he is good to him, and he's banking on that love. And he says, even though I don't feel your presence, I know you're with me because you have promised me, and I know you're good to your promises. I know that you're good to your word. I know what you say is true. I've seen it time and time again, even though my pain is causing me not to see it right now. And this ultimately leads him to trust. This trust leads him to praise. Here he is saying, where are you, God? And the next thing he's saying, I love you. I'm singing your praises. He's saying, I rejoice. My heart is rejoicing. And the thing that I want to point out is it would be easy to think that what happened in these six verses is that David was feeling all of these things. He's feeling the lack of God's presence, and then he appeals to God, and suddenly those things are gone. I'm going to submit something else to you. He's feeling all of those things, and at the same time, there's this commingling of praise and joy because he knows who God is, and they exist together. And when we try to compartmentalize them and say they can't exist together, then we're denying all the things that are always going on in our soul. Because we live in a world that has all of these things happening at one time. And that's the beauty of what David does, as he allows these things to coexist and to mingle together beautifully. He says, though I am broken and in deep pain, I can rejoice because I know you, God. I know your faithfulness to me. I know your love. And that's what allows him to praise in the midst of, during, well feeling, while feeling that God isn't present. There are other biblical lamenters besides David. He is the most well-known because we see lament after lament after lament from him. He shares those so beautifully with us that they show us the liberty to lament. They show us the license to lament. They show us what it looks like for godly lament. It's not just bewailing and bemoaning and groaning and all of those things outside of God. It's inviting God into all of those things. And that's what he does so beautifully. But we have other lamenters. We have Job. We all know Job was quite the sufferer, and he definitely did his share of lamenting. Job 3:24 says, for sighing comes to me instead of food. I'm not even eating. I'm hurting so much. My groans pour out like water. Jeremiah said in Jeremiah 27, O Lord, you have deceived me, and I was deceived. You overpowered me and prevailed. This is how he feels. But then he goes back to praise. Then he goes back to saying, I know you have a plan for me, plans to prosper me and not to harm me. This is the same man. But he's saying, you've deceived me. These are the confusion that we feel in this life. And then ultimately, Jesus was a lamenter. In fact, it says he was a man of sorrows. Isaiah 53:3 says he was despised and rejected by mankind, a man of suffering and familiar with pain. He understands our pain, and he actually shows us lament. We see lament in his final meal with the disciples. We see lament in the Garden of Gethsemane, where he's asking God, please take this cup from me. And then ultimately, we all know the most profound lament came while he's dying on the cross. In Matthew 27:46, he says, my God, why have you forsaken me? He feels forgotten and forsaken. And you know what? The reality is that God did have to turn his back on his son. We haven't had that. But Jesus shows us the lament when he feels the brokenness. Jesus understood lament, expressing it honestly in his pain. It was the only, this is what I'll say, is this was the only true and genuine response to the response of faith to the brokenness and fallenness of the world that he was experiencing. Here was a sinless man going to die on a cross, a wretched, wretched death, and that was the appropriate response, was to lament. And he did it himself. He says, why have you forsaken me? And if we're all honest with ourselves, we've all felt forsaken at times. We've all felt those things. And beautifully, this is the beauty, is in that, I say beautifully a lot, maybe because the scriptures are just beautiful, especially the Psalms. Beautifully, in the precise moment when Jesus felt most forsaken, that's when God was doing his greatest work in his life. That's when the greatest work of all mankind was being accomplished, was when Jesus felt forsaken. And so I ask you, if you're in pain, if you have any pain right now, what might God want to be accomplishing through your lament? What might he want to accomplish through your honesty with him, through your confusion, through whatever pain you might have? And praise God if there are some of you in this room where you're like, you know what, this isn't connecting with me to Christina. Not today. I am in such a good place, and I say praise God for that. But I also know there are lots of hurts and pains here. And so how might God want to work in you through lament, through honesty with him? And one of the things I want to say is it's often easy to, I won't say it's easy, but I will say it's easier to share our lament with God individually than to lament and be honest about those struggles in community. It gets a lot harder to express those things in community. And the reason being that we have, we're products of kind of an American spirituality that says the pursuit right now is of happiness, of God to bless us and make us happy. And that's kind of the culture, the Christian culture that we live in. And so to lament is going to erode at that. It's going to say, I'm struggling and I'm having a hard time, and it erodes at that. And sometimes what I've found is that if we question God amongst other believers, or we're confused and we share those things, that sometimes that can, in their minds, equate to faithlessness, when in fact that might be the most faith-filled thing you can do in that moment, is to express that honesty and that confusion and that concern. But what happens is we think, well, don't you have the joy of the Lord? Or what's, you know, and we want to speak the truth, and it is truth, but we want to speak the truth into that circumstance, not giving room and space to feel the struggle. And the struggle is where God wants to meet us. And the struggle is where he, then we can appeal to him. And there's other things that might, other parts of our Christian culture, and I won't even necessarily say it's our church in general. I'm just talking about Christian culture in general, where to experience sorrow is to threaten joy. So if you're experiencing sorrow, you certainly can't have joy. And we go back to David, who so beautifully showed us the model of those things commingling together, that they exist hand in hand, and that that's depth of faith. Lamenting in community requires not only for us to accept our own pain, but it requires us to accept the pain of another. And that's really hard to do. If we're going to allow somebody to be honest about their struggle with God and their confusion and their pain, we have to enter into their pain with them. And that's a really hard thing to do, especially if we're hurting ourselves. But the beauty is that when we do that, when we allow people into those broken places of confusion and honesty with God, that is where actually depth of relationship, depth of true community can occur, is in those places of lament together. Because what does it allow us to do? It allows us to appeal to God on behalf of one another, to appeal to God in those broken places. I'm going to read to you a quote from Michael Card, and I'm going to share with you a little bit about his book, but it's about lamenting in community. He says, "Our failure to lament in community cuts us off from each other. If you and I are to know one another in a deep way, we must share our hurts, our anger, our disappointments with each other and with God, so we can lament them together before God. Then only does our sharing become truly redemptive." And isn't that what we want? We want God's redemptive grace to come into those places. And something I want to suggest is that when we fail to lament, when we're feeling all of these things, a failure to lament can lead to denial. And when we have denial in our faith, it creates a disconnect from our espoused beliefs, what we're saying we believe, and what we're feeling in our hearts. And so when we don't allow ourselves to be honest with God, there becomes a disconnect. And then that affects all of life. When we're saying we believe these things, but we're feeling something different, and we don't deal with that. Does that make sense? Until we learn to lament, I also don't think we have any relevance to the rest of the world as believers. Because if you talk to people that are not Christians, one of the first things they'll ask you is, well, why is there all this pain? There can't be a God if there's all this pain. And if we are denying that pain, we have no relevance with them. If we're denying that, so what we do in our lament is we enter into that and we allow God to come and we appeal to him in that. And when we are able to engage our pain, we become more relevant to the world that sees the pain. And we say, we feel all those things you're saying. I sometimes wonder, where are you, God? But I so know in my very bowels, in my gut, that he's there, that he's with me. They see the pain and they see the heartaches and they see the disappointment, and we must acknowledge our struggle so that the gospel can be heard by them. The gospel is about bringing redemption through pain. That's what Jesus did. Through his pain, he brought redemption. That's what the gospel is. So to do so, we have to acknowledge the pain in our lives. Michael Card again said, if we want to learn to never let go of God, if we want to learn to never let go of God, we must learn to speak the language of lament. We have to pour out our every hurt, disappointment, temptation, and even anger. I'm going to share with you this book that has been key to my journey. Well, the book has in itself been key. It's a great book, but what he talks about in this book has been key to my journey. It's called A Sacred Sorrow, Reaching Out to God in the Lost Language of Lament. If you don't know who Michael Card is, he was a Christian musician and a Christian artist. And he, somewhere down the line, I believe, lost his voice. And part of his lament has been that his whole career, which was about his singing and his voice, was lost. But what happened is when 9/11 occurred, a pastor that he was very connected to said he was going through every song he could possibly find to speak to the horrific attacks that had occurred in our country, and he couldn't find any songs about lament. That it was an absence from what we're singing. It's an absence from our worship. And he goes on to say that worship comes out of the wilderness. That worship comes out of the lament. And so he was then compelled out of his own experience of loss to write this book. It's an excellent book. If you don't understand what I'm talking about and it doesn't connect with you, maybe his book will. So if you're interested, I would just highly recommend picking up A Sacred Sorrow. I'm going to just say that I'm going to challenge us to just take a moment right now, somewhere, wherever you are, if you have space somewhere, what are the things that are heavy on your heart right now? Where are your questions for God? Where is your confusion? Where is it in your pain that you can't see him, but you desperately want to? And I just want to encourage you to take a moment to write those down. Where do you feel hurt by God? I can tell you, I felt pretty hurt by God, pretty hurt by the choices that he had for my life. But I've got to express those to him. And so where are the questions that you have for him? And then after that, I'm going to maybe, if these are safe places, I'm going to encourage you to share those in your group today. Where are your questions that you have for God? Where is your confusion? But one of the things I want to say as all of us will be hearing these questions, I really encourage you to not answer one another's questions, to just listen. Listen to the heartache behind those questions. Listen to the sorrow there. Give people the space to actually feel their hurt, to be confused, and to struggle, and not to feel like we have to give truth to squelch it. forgive me if that doesn't make sense, but just let people share those hurts and those questions. And then what I want you to do is I want you to pray for one another. What I want you to do is I want you to appeal to God on their behalf to come into those questions, to help them in those areas of hurt, to invite him into those dark, hard, broken places. And then ultimately, I want you to end your time together in praise. In praise of who God is, of how you've experienced his faithfulness, of where you know him deeply, and that is what you can bank on every day. So I don't want this to end without that peace, because that is the beautiful part of this whole lament, is that it says, I feel all of these things, but I know who you are, and I praise you because of it. So take a moment to write down some of those things, and then we're going to end with just a song. Hopefully, right, Diane? I think we will. I think we're good.